on its 157th day. The Israeli genocide in Gaza claims more civilian lives as the death toll tops 31,000, mostly women and children. Palestinian resistance fighters carry out more retaliatory operations against Israeli forces in Gaza, inflicting losses and casualties on them. Also in the headlines, as Muslims mark the start of the holy month of Ramadan, Israel continues its campaign of starvation against Palestinians in Gaza by refusing to allow much-needed aid into the Strip. Well, welcome to the studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. Israel continues its genocide of Palestinians in Gaza, killing more civilians in fresh strikes across the besieged territory. One of the latest attacks hit a residential building in a Gaza neighborhood, killing 16 civilians. The Gaza Health Ministry said Monday that the death toll from over 5 months of Israeli genocide in Gaza has risen to over 31,100 people. More than 72,000 others have been injured. The regime has also razed most of the civilian and other structures in Gaza. According to Gaza's government, 220 mosques have been destroyed in the coastal territory since October 7. The military wing of the Palestinian resistance movement Hamas has inflicted losses on Israeli forces in its fresh retaliatory attacks in Gaza. The Al-Qassam Brigade said its fighters managed to detonate a building in an undisclosed location in Gaza, killing and injuring a number of Israeli infantry forces. It added that resistance fighters clashed with another group of Israeli troops inside of a tunnel, which caused several casualties among invaders. The military wing of Hamas also said that an Israeli engineering corps soldier was shot in the head in an area near the southern city of Khan Yunis. And in northern Gaza, the Al-Qassam Brigades targeted an Israeli military post using a drone. Another Israeli soldier was also targeted by resistance snipers in Gaza City. Palestinian resistance fighters have been putting stiff resistance to Israeli soldiers since the start of the regime's ground invasion of Gaza. A former Palestinian prisoner says Israel is attempting to achieve, through negotiations, what it has failed to obtain by force and war.
One of the reasons behind the Al-Aqsa flood operation was to capture Israeli soldiers for the purpose of conducting a prisoner swap. As far as I know, and according to media reports, more than 140 Israeli captives are currently held by the resistance in Gaza. The Israeli regime launched an attack and killed Palestinians in order to extract the captives by force. But the resistance has refused to free any captive held in Gaza unless Palestinians held in Israeli jails are freed, particularly elderly people, patients, women, and children. If they want their captives, then we want our detainees in return. Currently, negotiations are underway to reach a prisoner swap deal. Israel, by nature, always eludes. The initial framework for the deal was outlined by Israel in Paris, and we didn't intervene at all. They sent that framework deal to Hamas for consideration. And for its part, Hamas sent it to other Palestinian factions. That proposal only serves the interests of Israel, as the regime wants to take its captives at a low price. The regime apparently believes that they can achieve through negotiations what they failed to take by force and war, and that's impossible. That proposal was rejected, but amendments were made to it. Israel, however, rejected those amendments. We only call for the release of our detainees, for a ceasefire and the withdrawal of the Israeli troops, and for allowing food to enter Gaza. We don't want anything else.
Sheikh Talal Abdulrahman, who has been a prisoner in Israeli jails for 18 years, made the comments in an exclusive interview with the latest episode, or in the latest episode of Press TV's Hidden Files program. Abdulrahman detailed the hardships that Palestinian inmates face in the regime's jails. He also underlined the Israeli regime's escalating crackdown on Palestinians since October 7. Israeli troops have carried out fresh incursions into several towns and neighborhoods across the occupied West Bank on the first day of the holy month of Ramadan. Regime forces raided the city of Qalqilya, Nur Shams refugee camp near Tulkar, and a village west of Ramallah. They abducted a number of Palestinians following clashes with resistance fighters. Several Palestinians were also detained after Israeli forces denied entry of worshippers into the Al-Aqsa Mosque. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad movement denounced the move. It said Israel is playing with fire by the desecrations of the mosque and blocking worshippers' access to the holy site. The Israeli regime has kept the Al-Aqsa Mosque under a tight siege for 5 months now. We were earlier talked to our correspondent from Ramallah, Mona Kandil, to get the latest updates regarding fresh Israeli raids in the occupied West Bank.
the Israeli forces stormed several areas, as you have mentioned. The Israelis raided Al Jalazon refugee camp, arrested a number of Palestinians there, including former prisoners. The Israeli forces has stormed the city of Tul Karim and the refugee camp of Nur Shams. And for several hours, the people said that exchange of fire had taken place between members of the resistance groups and the Israeli forces. But during this raid, the Israeli forces caused severe destruction using the bulldozers in the infrastructure, in the roads. The Israelis had also stormed Al-Balu'a in Al-Biri and Shukba area near Ramallah and detained a number of Palestinians. But in Qalqilya, there is an operation taking place up till the moment where the Israeli forces stormed the Qalqilya as well as the Kufr Saba neighborhood and stormed the house of one of the paramedics there and detained him. According to the Prisoners Commission and the Palestinian Prisoners Society, the Israelis have detained so far 7,510 Palestinians since the 7th of October, including 500 children, 240 women, as well as 57 journalists.
It's time now for the news review of this bulletin. Muslims around the world are marking the fasting month of Ramadan against the backdrop of the U.S.-Israeli genocide in the besieged Gaza Strip. Iran, Morocco, Libya, Oman, and Jordan have announced a Tuesday start for the holy month. Saudi Arabia, the United Arab Emirates, Qatar, Egypt, Algeria, and Tunisia have already announced Monday as the beginning of Ramadan. People across the Palestinian territories, including in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, also began their fasting on Monday. This is amid malnutrition and dehydration in the Gaza Strip, including in the southern city of Rafah, where some 1.5 million people are taking shelter from Israeli airstrikes. Many international organizations have warned of a looming catastrophe if Israel does not allow humanitarian aid to enter the blockaded territory. Mutiaba Musaba is a correspondent joining us from Deir al-Balah. We also have Jafar Ramini, who is a Palestinian writer and political analyst, joining us from Fremantle in Australia. Welcome to you both. Mutiaba Musaba, let me start with you. So we know it's the month of Ramadan, and I'm wondering how Palestinians there are coping with this, given the fact that they're still being attacked from every which way. And of course, many are starving.
Yes, Kaveh, actually this Ramadan is unprecedented in terms or compared to the precedented months. As you know, that the people of Gaza Strip are welcoming this month with more airstrikes, more bloodshed and more destruction, as the Israeli occupation forces are still committing more crimes and more massacres against the Palestinian civilians here in the Gaza Strip. Over the last night, the Israeli occupation warplanes destroyed a residential building in Al-Zaytun neighborhood, claiming the lives of at least 16 Palestinian civilians, mostly women and children. And even in Rafah city, the city that houses at least 1.5 million Palestinian civilians, these moments actually, another residential building was destroyed by the Israeli warplanes, claiming the lives of at least 4 Palestinian civilians. In addition to that, the Israeli artillery maintained its shelling towards the eastern part of the central area of Gaza Strip here, Al-Burij refugee camp and the Mughraga neighborhood were targeted heavily by the intense Israeli shelling of that Israeli forces on the ground. While in Khan Yunis city, the Israeli occupation forces also maintained blowing up several and more residential buildings, particularly in Al-Fukhari neighborhood, which is located in the eastern part of Khan Yunis city. And even the surrounding areas of Hamad neighborhood, located in the western part of Khan Yunis, several and multiple Palestinian residential buildings and houses were completely destroyed and blown up by the Israeli occupation forces using the explosive devices. We are talking about continuous Israeli airstrikes that are still hitting several areas of Gaza Strip and claiming more lives of the Palestinian civilians. However, on the ground, the Israeli salvation war is still continued against the Palestinian people. Over the last couple of hours, the Gaza's health ministry announced that three Palestinian babies actually passed away and died of hunger and famine as they were suffering from the dehydration and the malnutrition over the lack of the food and the milk and the drinkable water. And this number rising and soaring incrementally as thousands of the Palestinian children are suffering from the same circumstances and the same catastrophic humanitarian conditions. So generally we can say that this Ramadan comes actually while the people here in Gaza are completely afflicted by the continuous Israeli genocide in Gaza. Over to you, Kofi.
Jafar Mamani, it's a really desperate situation, not that it wasn't before. And, you know, the U.S. president did promise that it would have some kind of a truce before Ramadan. But we know that Hamas also has been steadfast in not wanting a temporary one, amongst other diversions that there have been. How do you view what's happening here in terms of the responsibility? We know, obviously, Israel is the one that's executing it, but it's the U.S. that is the one that's supporting the genocidal onslaught that's happening.
I view it as a total disaster, and I view the Americans as being totally complicit, if not partners, in this genocide and starvation of the Palestinian people. You mentioned Ramadan, and this is the irony. Even on the seeing of the crescent, the Muslim world cannot agree, and that is part of the problem. We are divided and we are fragmented, and Israel and America knows it, and they encourage that. And President Biden, in his speech to the nation on Sunday, he was interviewed on television, live on television in America, and he said that the Netanyahu is doing Israeli disservice. No mention of the 30 plus thousand Palestinians who were killed. He was just worried about the reputation of Israel. And not to miss the point, Mr. Netanyahu immediately on Sunday made an interview with Bild, the German tabloid, and he absolutely refuted what the president said. He said, no, I'm not doing this service to the Israeli to Israel. All the Israelis agree with me that we must continue this war until we finish Hamas, i.e., until we ethnically cleanse Gaza totally. And he said, and another thing, Mr. President should know that the majority of Israelis do not want a Palestinian state shoved down their throats. So there it is. It's in the open. They called for genocide and ethnic cleansing from the word go, and the world keeps saying Israel has the right to defend itself. The Palestinians have no rights. And when you see what's going on in Gaza, and believe me, my friend, I'm in contact with hundreds and hundreds of families in Gaza, all begging to leave. And I'm in a dilemma here. Do I want to empty Gaza and do Israel's bidding, or encourage my people to stay and suffer even more and even die? This is it. This is the world looking at genocide happening on camera every day and looking the other way. Another thing, if I may, the United States of America could stop this with a phone call from Mr. Biden to Netanyahu to say stop it. They did it before and they can do it now.
All right, thank you very much for that. We do appreciate it. Jafar Ramini there, a Palestinian writer and political analyst, and also Muti Abu Musaba, a correspondent from Deir al-Balah. With that, we come to an end of our news review. The Lebanese resistance movement Hezbollah has carried out retaliatory operations against Israeli targets amid heightened tensions north of the occupied territories. Hezbollah said it fired two missiles against Israeli positions across southern Lebanese border. The movement also said it targeted an Israeli military and missile base with four drones. For more on that story, we're now joined by our Beirut correspondent, Mariam Saleh. Mariam, what do you have for us?
Well, we do know that Hezbollah has launched several operations, but the most significant one is the one that you mentioned, of course, against the barracks of Keilah, and that is an area which is considered very strategic for the Israelis. Also, this is, of course, very qualitative, especially with the fact that Hezbollah decided to use four drones, kamikaze-style drones, and this means that this target is very important. They say that they hit their target very precisely, and that is what they call the command center, which they targeted is the command center for the air defense system and the rocket defense areas of the Israelis. And so they have targeted the Keilah post before, the barracks in that area, but here to say that they're using four kamikaze drones, I believe we should have some interesting footage. If Hezbollah does have that footage, I think we would have a very significant operation, since we have been hearing from the Israelis lately that Hezbollah has very focused on basically targeting the defense systems of the Israelis. And this, although has not stopped the Israelis' activities when it comes to their air activities and their drones flying over Lebanese skies, however, it will be on the long run very detrimental for the Israeli defenses in any type of confrontation that they will have to face with Hezbollah. They are basically getting weakened in that state, and they are also losing their ammunition. We know that there is a lack of ammunition, especially those rockets that are used to intercept Hezbollah rockets. Now, Hezbollah also launched with their mortars and their guided missiles and perhaps even anti-tank missiles the Jal al-Alam post, which is also one of the posts that is usually targeted. It's on the eastern side it's on the western side of the border. They also launched another attack against Israeli soldiers in Talat al-Tayhat.
Thank you for that. Mariam Saleh, they're talking to us from Beirut. Thank you, Mariam. And that does it for this edition of World News. Bye-bye for now.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 31 meters. 9,650 kHz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Southern Africa can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave, 25 meters, 11,880 kHz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our program via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on IranSat or BAT 5 and IntelSat 39 and via the internet. Our internet address is pastoday.ir/en. And now you can listen to Arabi English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about our audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم
السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered by the Commander-in-Chief of Iran's Armed Forces, Imam Khamenei, on October 10, 2023, during the joint graduation ceremony for the cadets studying in the academies of the Islamic Republic of Iran's Armed Forces. In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful, all praise is due to God, Lord of the worlds, and peace and greetings be upon our Master, Muhammad, and his pure, immaculate progeny, particularly the remnant of God on earth. I would like to extend my greetings and congratulations to the dear youth who are treasured by the Iranian nation. Today is their graduation day. I would also like to congratulate the young people who are entering the nation's officer training universities and receiving their epaulets today. I would like to thank our dear brothers and respected commanders for the reports they presented. I would also like to thank you for the beautiful anthem that you sang. The first thing that I want to tell you, dear young people today, is that you have been instated into the armed forces and you have chosen this. This is one of the most vital jobs in the administration of the country and in the management of this dear land. This is a great honor for you.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Military jobs, whether in the various forces of the army, the various forces of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, or the country's law enforcement organization, are some of the occupations that rank at the top of the list of the country and nation's most important duties and responsibilities. You have accepted these responsibilities. You have gained this honor for yourselves and for your families by agreeing to work in the various parts of the armed forces. The armed forces are considered to be an iron shield for national security, an iron shield for national security, and national security is the foundation for all the other important areas that play a role in the country's progress. If there is no security, there is nothing else. If a country lacks the ability to protect its own security, it has no choice but to define itself under this power or that power. It has no choice but to attach itself to others. What does this mean? It means this country has to put its national honor on the line. If it fails to do this, if it fails to use its national honor, its political words will naturally have no credibility in the world.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. You've done for me through all my years.
face to face. Hello and welcome to another edition of Face to Face. I'm Mahdi Abbasian. Today in the studio, we are joined by one of the members of the political bureau of the Hamas resistance movement, Mr. Osama Hamdan. Welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Hamdan, the Al-Aqsa flood was a powerful, unexpected blow to the Israeli occupation. But did you anticipate the Israeli response to be this much brutal and heinous?
There is no doubt that Operation Al-Aqsa Flood represented a success for the resistance movement, a success in carrying out a large-scale operation without the enemy being able to take action preemptively. This operation succeeded in seizing the entire Gaza positions within just hours. This is undoubtedly a great achievement, but here's the question. Was there any expectation for the enemy's reaction? Certainly. It was expected that there would be a reaction, but it is the nature of the occupation. It kills you, seizes your land, arrests you, and imprisons you. For example, in the West Bank in 2022, before the operations, the number of martyrs was about 500. The number of wounded people who were taken to hospitals exceeded 3,000. We are talking about thousands of prisoners. Under this occupation for 75 years, you have two choices. Either you do nothing and it continues to kill you, capture you, and seize your land, or you resist and the enemy will continue the aggression. But the message will be conveyed that the Palestinian people are still adhering to their right to resist, that the enemy is paying a price for the occupation, and that in the end, this enemy will be forced to leave your land. Therefore, when you always choose resistance and you anticipate the scale of aggression and the enemy's reaction, you are convinced that this is the path that will lead to liberation.
With all the killing, destruction in Gaza, backed by the West, especially the United States, how do you plan to rebuild your popularity and also lay foundations for a new phase?
First, we start with the fact that the United States of America does not just support Israel. The United States of America is a partner in crime, a partner in genocide. It may appear to support Israel politically, but in practice, it provides ammunition, equipment, and weapons to the Zionist entity. It also employs all technological facilities in discovering tunnels and thus serves as pillars of Zionism. It is a full partner in the crime against the Palestinian people. On the other hand, when we talk about our popularity, we are not worried about it because historically the Palestinian people have always been the ones who choose resistance, and the popularity of resistance always rises. 2 months ago, various opinion polling institutions conducted an opinion poll about the popularity of the Palestinian Authority. Hamas is popular in Gaza, which was not so before the operation. Before the war, Hamas's popularity ranged between 40 to 45%. After the operation, its popularity rose. The Palestinian people saw that the resistance movement has been fighting this army for days, an army that boasted about its invincibility. People began to feel that the chances of liberation were higher than ever before, so Hamas's popularity rose. This gives us additional responsibility. How do we deal with this popularity and what serves the interest of our people to achieve national success? There is no doubt that this is a great responsibility.
Definitely it is. Now, there are propositions suggesting that Hamas is being coerced into relinquishing its leadership role in Gaza post-war amidst American and possibly Arab support. Now, leading to a transition to the Palestinian Authority. Now, what is Hamas's stance on these propositions and how do you plan to particularly thwart them?
Firstly, it is clear that Hamas was never committed to being the ruling authority. We have always adhered to a specific principle that the Palestinian people are the ones who elect and who choose their leadership through free elections. The leadership must present a program to the people that hold it accountable. Our program is clear. We resist for liberation. We won the election in 2006 and served this platform. America cannot change this fact, and we do not accept its interference in our internal affairs. We have informed all Arab countries that their interference over the Palestinian people is rejected. Whoever decides the next day in Gaza or the Palestinian people alone. This is the first part. The second part, we met with all the Palestinian factions and an agreement was reached on basic issues, including the formation of a transitional Palestinian government after the war in which all the factions are represented and have their authority to hold elections and begin the reconstruction process. Therefore, we are not concerned about the future of the leadership of the Palestinian people as much as we are keen for the leadership to be the one that has the option of resistance and believes in the complete liberation of Palestine.
The next question is, your objective with Operation Al-Aqsa was to shed light on the plight of Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails, yet the occupation has added around 10,000 new prisoners. Does Hamas still prioritize shedding light on prisoners, or is it the priority now to reach a ceasefire and to get humanitarian aid into Gaza?
Let me clarify here that the issue of prisoners was just part of the objectives of the operation and was not the primary objective of it. The main goal of the operation was to confront the project of the Netanyahu government, which announced that it would end the Palestinian issue within the next 4 years. He developed a program to seize Al-Quds and transfer ownership of real estate from the Palestinians to the Zionists, seizing the maximum level, building more settlements in the West Bank, and developed a program to bring in 1 million new settlers from outside of Palestine, Jews from all over the world, and decided to begin the process of rebuilding his relations in the region, with American support, to form a situation in which Israel appears to be a natural entity. The operation came to say that Palestine is still under occupation. The Palestinian people are still resistant. We want to liberate our land, and this is what happened. One of the results of the operation is that the prisoners will be transferred. One of the results of the operation is that the siege on the Palestinian people ends. But the essence of the process is to put the Palestinian issue on the right path.
Great. Now, if a ceasefire is agreed upon, what kind of a guarantee can there be that ensures the U.S. will comply with the terms, or the Israeli regime for that matter, especially if and when all the captives are released? Because we know when it comes to Israelis, they are not very good with being committed to their oaths and their commitments.
I agree with you that the Israelis do not abide by agreements and covenants. Their history of this is very bad. Therefore, the real guarantee is the resistance's ability to continue the confrontation with the occupation. The real guarantee is the ability of the Palestinian people to withstand. The real guarantee that we won in Operation Al-Aqsa Flood is that the Israelis and Americans began to realize that the resistance axis is capable of applying pressure to support the resistance in Gaza and is capable of having an effective influence on the political positions in favor of the resistance. Therefore, when you make an agreement, you bet on the power cards you hold, that they are the ones that can be a true guarantor of the agreement that was concluded. The occupation will try to evade or deceive, but we will also try, through the power cards we possess, to make it as disciplined as possible.
And Mr. Hamdan, speaking of negotiations and ceasefire talks, why did Hamas withdraw from the Cairo negotiations? Does the delay harm Palestinians more or the occupation?
The truth is that we did not withdraw from the Cairo negotiations. What happened was that after the Paris meeting, a proposal was presented to Hamas regarding a ceasefire and some details. This proposal was also presented to the occupation side. For us, we responded to the proposal. We proposed some modifications to it and developed our vision to improve the proposal. On the Israeli side, the mediators were surprised because Israel, which had expressed its approval of the Paris proposal, retracted parts of it. Therefore, the mediators began trying to bring Israel back to the Paris proposal. We must wait for the reaction of the mediators with the Zionist entity. From our side, there was a clear statement by our brother Ismail Haniya, head of the political bureau, that we deal positively with ideas that we are keen to stop the aggression, provide relief to our people and the people of the siege, and the start of reconstruction process. In exchange for all of this, we will go to the prisoner exchange process, and therefore we have clearly defined our position. We are waiting for the enemy to have a positive position. The ball is in their court and the mediator's court. We have not backed down. As long as we are negotiating, we go on with it, and as long as the fight goes on, we fight.
Thank you so much, Mr. Hamdan. And now we will continue the interview after a very short break. Okay, and now you're watching us having an interview with Mr. Osama Hamdan, the member of the political bureau of Hamas resistance movement. Mr. Hamdan, how can Hamas utilize internal pressure on Netanyahu by emphasizing the urgency of releasing prisoners in Gaza, by highlighting the significance of this issue within Israeli society and among political stakeholders? This heightened pressure may compel him to seek a ceasefire deal that aligns with Hamas's terms in order to de-escalate tensions and address the issue of prisoners effectively.
There is no doubt that in the negotiation process, you make every effort to put pressure on the enemy. One of the tools of pressure, which you also mentioned, is to the prisoner swap, what these prisoners are suffering from, and the killing that occurred to some families as a result of the Israeli Air Force's bombing of some sites. Also, some of the prisoners were killed directly by the occupation army, as happening with three soldiers who were captured by the resistance, and then the group that captured them was martyred. When they escaped, the army killed them despite identifying them. This puts great pressure on Netanyahu. But the resistance also has other tools to put pressure on Netanyahu. One of them is the resistance's unrelenting firing of rockets at some cities and regions occupied in 1948. The continuation of the resistance action on the battlefield against the occupation is putting pressure on Israel, because every day there are more deaths among the occupation soldiers and more losses among the files and ranks of the army. Just for the army, the destruction of 1,000 military vehicles out of about 4,000 military vehicles in the ground forces is very heavy. This is all a lot of pressure on Netanyahu. An important addition that should be noted is the action of the resistance in southern Lebanon, or what the Ansar Allah resistance is doing in Yemen, or the resistance in Iraq. This created pressure on the Zionist entity and also on the United States, which does not want the confrontation to expand in the region because it still believes that it can rearrange the region. The expansion of the confrontation will cause the Americans to lose control in the region, and the region will go on paths that will not necessarily be in the interest of the Americans, but rather will be in the interest of the people of the region. And this is what the Americans fear. These are all pressure cards on Netanyahu, and I believe this is the secret of the American insistence on reaching a solution that leads to a ceasefire.
Now, something about a ceasefire. Right now, the situation in Rafah. Netanyahu threatens to invade Rafah, even if a ceasefire agreement is reached. How can Hamas, you know, restrain Netanyahu's recklessness in his military options in Gaza?
When Netanyahu threatens to invade Rafah, he is seeking two purposes. The first goal is to create pressure on the resistance to give up some of its demands in the negotiations. The second one is to try to put pressure on the mediators, otherwise things will deteriorate further. We said to the mediators that any move Netanyahu makes to attack Rafah will be faced by the resistance, but it will also make Netanyahu involved in a genocide massacre. And everyone knows that the International Court of Justice issued a preliminary ruling and set conditions for it. If Netanyahu is involved in a military operation towards Rafah, this will confirm that what he is doing is genocide, and this means that he is committing a crime against humanity, and this will have repercussions not only for him, but also on the American administration, which I mentioned a little while ago that it is an accomplice in this crime. That's why we're applying confrontational pressure. I think that Netanyahu is hesitant about the Grand Operation, but if he decides to do so, things will not be easy for his army.
Now, the world sympathizes greatly with the Palestinian people, but Israelis are attempting to influence global attention. For example, by, you know, Israeli president presentation of a book titled The End of the Jews to convince the world that Hamas seeks to annihilate the Jewish population. Now, how do you respond to such displays, especially in a significant security conference like the Munich conference?
I must clarify an issue by which the Israelis and the United States are trying to put pressure on us. We do not fight the Israelis because they are Jews. We are fighting them because they are occupiers of our land. Meaning if they leave our land, we will not pursue them and we will not fight them. Our battle has a political dimension that has nothing to do with the fact that they are Jews and believe in Judaism and has nothing to do with the fact that they came to Palestine or are present in other places. The real problem is that they occupied our land. The Jewish problem as a religious one is not related to our country. Rather, the Jewish problem began in Europe. They were expelled from Britain in the 16th century, and for 200 years, Jews were banned from entering. In France, they were prevented from exercising their religious rights from 1400 AD until 1808. In Spain, they were expelled and prevented from exercising their religious rights until 1982. In Germany, we know what happened. Every time the Jews fled this persecution, they came to our Muslim country. And you know that there are Jews in all Muslim countries who live in safety. The problem rose when they decided to become an occupying force, usurp our rights, and kill our people, which prompted us to resist them. Therefore, when the Zionist chief of staff talks about the end of the Jews, he is lying and trying to make excuses for a story that we did not create and was created by the Nazis. I think the answer to it is very simple. The Zionist media published pictures of him signing the missiles that were fired to kill our people, women and children. Therefore, I hope that he changes the title of his book to say, The End of the Occupation. Yes, the occupation will end, and we as Muslims will certainly be able to end it. This is our religion to embrace all people of other religions. As Palestinians, we have Muslims and Christians. No one has ever talked about a crisis between Muslims and Christians in Palestine. Rather, we lived as one nation. Therefore, yes, the occupation will end, but not on the basis that the head of the Zionist entity or the Zionist propaganda speaks about. They want to make us appear as brutal people.
Thank you. That was a very thorough explanation of the conflict between Palestinians and the Israeli regime. Now, let's talk about what's going to happen after the genocidal war in Gaza. How do you envision the end of this onslaught and now entering its fifth month without a clear ceasefire on the horizon?
There is no doubt that the occupation announced the goals of its military operation. They announced that they want to destroy the resistance of Hamas, They want to destroy Hamas, meaning the resistance. They announced that they wanted to free the prisoners from the hands of the resistance. They announced that they wanted to form an administration for the Gaza Strip, an administration linked to the regime. After about 5 months, what happened? They failed to eliminate the resistance. The resistance on the battlefield is still fighting. Every day there are losses among the occupation army, dead and wounded. They are still held captive by the resistance. The enemy was unable to free anyone alive except for what took place according to the exchange we agreed upon. They failed in trying to create a situation in which an administration in Gaza works with the occupation. They once spoke about clans and families, and the families issued a statement saying that they were biased towards the resistance. They tried to talk about a civil administration to be imposed on the Palestinian people. The Palestinians announced that they would deal with it as agents of the regime. Therefore, they failed in all of their goals. They had only one thing left, and that was the attack on Rafah. Its results will also be a failure. The enemy will realize at some point that it is unable to succeed. The Americans realize this issue and therefore are trying to persuade the Israelis to accept a ceasefire. The regional countries that accepted the Israeli aggression began to realize that the resistance's victory would not serve the interest of the Zionists. Therefore, I believe that the chances of reaching a ceasefire agreement, even if they do not seem high so far, are now present, and we will do our best to achieve it as quickly as possible, God willing.
And Mr. Hamdan, you already mentioned the support for the Palestinian resistance by the Iraqi resistance, the resistance in Yemen and Lebanon. Now, I want to ask you, how does Hamas evaluate this support for Palestinians in the Gaza Strip? Have they, you know, slowed down the pace of the onslaught in Gaza or exerted significant pressure on Israel and Americans that support them or are complicit in their crimes to impose certain options on Netanyahu?
I think there were two impacts. There is a direct impact and there is a strategic impact. The direct impact of the Resistance Act in Lebanon forced the occupation regime to keep parts of the army in northern Palestine. This means that if this confrontation had not occurred, this entire army would have launched an aggression against Gaza. And therefore, the Israeli army's ability to confront it in Gaza would have been exhausted. Also, the resistance in Lebanon succeeded in inflicting real losses and casualties on the occupation army, and the occupation army began to feel that it might fall into additional trouble if this aggression continued. The resistance in Yemen succeeded in sending a clear message. A siege on the Palestinian people means a siege on the Zionist entity. The American administration did not succeed in dealing with the matter despite its aggression against Yemen. It has been proven that this aggression did not lead to any cessation of the resistance in Yemen, represented by our brothers in Ansarullah. In Iraq, the American administration thought that the Iraqi people, after everything they had gone through and suffered from the American occupation and the injustice they suffered, might not care about issues like the Palestinian issue. The Americans were surprised that the Iraqi people began their resistance to confirm that they were with Palestine, and thus the Americans seemed to realize that they were losing and that their losses would be reflected in Israel. Strategically, I believe that the resistance action in Lebanon, Yemen, and Iraq achieved two goals. The first is that it sent a message that the resistance in the region is cohesive and works together in its own way and not according to what others want. Its method is effective. The second issue is that this axis has a firm, principled position and is using its capabilities in an intelligent and wise manner and is capable of achieving results. This means that the future of the region will not be according to what the United States of America or the Zionist entity wants. Rather, we are approaching a stage that the future of the region will be according to what the people of the region want. Therefore, I believe that what was achieved strategically and momentarily was important.
Thank you so much, Dr. Osama Hamdan, member of the political bureau of Hamas Resistance Movement. Goodbye.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio. With you every single moment.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Fasting Will Make You Righteous. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. It is an honor to be here at your service, dear friends. This is A to Z. So we are talking about the holy month of Ramadan and Islamic lifestyle. So what we want to talk about on the program is this idea that fasting will make you righteous. Now, if we read the Holy Quran, inshallah, before the holy month of Ramadan and during the holy month of Ramadan and inshallah after the holy month of Ramadan, we will find that there are many beautiful ways in which the Holy Quran talks about fasting. And so if we look at chapter number 2, which is Surah Al-Baqarah, and verse number 183, we find that Allah the Almighty talks about fasting, and He describes fasting in a very beautiful way. You know, sometimes one of the issues that we have is that we don't really understand the essence of the holy month of Ramadan. And likewise, we don't really understand the essence of fasting. Now, perhaps this has many different reasons, you know, for example, the environment in which we grew up in, or what we have been taught in that environment, you know, are they conducive to Islamic teachings? Are they conducive to the various teachings of other divinely sent religions or not, right? So if we live in a purely materialistic society, then of course we'll find that, you know, we might not be so in tuned and kind of, you know, appreciate the essence of fasting. But if we live in a society or if we live in a place where we have access to adequate knowledge about Islamic practices, we will realize, you know, the essence of fasting and we'll be able to appreciate it. So this is what we're talking about, is the essence of fasting and how it will make us righteous.
رمضان المستبين جاء بالنور المبين رمضان 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 القانتين.
Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about the essence of fasting. And of course, we are talking about this verse from the Holy Quran, chapter number 2, verse number 183. So in this chapter, of course, fasting has been, it is said that fasting has been prescribed for the people as it was prescribed for people before us, so that we may become righteous, so that we may be able to guard against evil, so that we may attain taqwa, this God awareness, this God consciousness, this piety. So when we start to think along these lines, of course, which they are the lines which the Holy Quran has given us, then we really, you know, begin to understand a little bit about the essence and this, you know, inner reality of fasting. So what we have been told now in the Holy Quran, specifically in this verse, is that fasting was not just prescribed for us in the modern day, but it was also prescribed for the people before us. And that's what's interesting, is that in many of the other, you know, quote-unquote Abrahamic religions, Christianity and Judaism, you will find that there is an emphasis upon fasting. And, well, we'll talk about that on another program, but what is the ultimate goal of fasting, or what is the ultimate net yield of fasting? Well, the result of fasting is that you become righteous, you become noble, you become honorable, you attain this taqwa. Taqwa, of course, you know, commonly translated as piety, or this awareness of the existence of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And so, inshallah, this is one of the things that we should be working towards in the holy month of Ramadan, and that is to attain that piety, that consciousness of Allah, that taqwa, inshallah, via our fasting.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parsetoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Declassified. Hello, I'm Chris Williamson. This is Palestine Declassified. We're the only weekly show that's dedicated to investigating and exposing the Israeli regime's global war against solidarity with the illegally occupied people of Palestine. In this week's show, we'll be exposing the activities of an Israeli lobby group operating in Spain, calling itself Action and Communication on the Middle East, which is usually referred to by its initials, ACOM. On its LinkedIn page, ACOM describes itself as an independent organisation that aims to reinforce the political relationship between Spain and Israel by working with governments, political parties, the media and civil society. But Latifa Abu Chakra has been peering behind ACOM's benign veneer, where she discovered a rather different and sinister reality, as she'll explain in this report.
The former social rights minister in Spain, Ione Belarra, is one of the few European politicians who has been vocal from the outset in criticizing Israel's genocidal campaign in Gaza. While she was still a minister in the Spanish government, she took to the streets in the aftermath of 7th of October, denouncing Israel's planned genocide in Gaza and calling for sanctions as well as a ban on arms sales to the Zionist regime. Belarra was quickly hailed for her heroism, but she also came under attack from Zionist lobby groups in Spain. ACOM, which stands for Action and Communication on the Middle East, is an ultra-right-wing Islamophobic Israel lobby group which engages in lawfare and defamation tactics against supporters of Palestine. The lobby group reported Belarra to the Spanish prosecutor's office for incitement to hatred, claiming that she had abused her position and had exceeded her right to freedom of expression. ACOM has a long history of trying to shut down free speech on Israel. In response to a boycott campaign which calls for apartheid-free spaces, which has seen shops and local authorities in Spain boycotting the Zionist regime, ACOM has taken dozens of legal cases to try to stop the boycott. One of their cases even reached the Spanish Supreme Court, which declared the boycott discriminatory. While Belarra's views are popular in Spain, she lost her job in the Spanish government following a reshuffle in late November 2023, although it's likely that her dismissal was influenced by other factors. The Spanish Prime Minister, Pedro Sanchez, has himself been much more vocal than other European leaders in support of Palestine. Sanchez declared last November that Spain would soon recognize a Palestinian state. Sanchez also raised his concerns about the numbers of Palestinian children being killed and said that he seriously doubted whether Israel was complying with international humanitarian law. The Israel lobby's influence in Spain has been less powerful than in many European countries, and polling indicates that support for Palestine is strong in Spain. Early last year, for example, the mayor of Barcelona, Ada Colau, wrote to Benjamin Netanyahu to